Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. The Fed's version of its refusal to bail out Lehman Brothers is refuted. Was it murder on Wall Street, a financial whodunit today? On Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Lawrence Ball is professor of economics. He's also chairman of the econ department at Johns Hopkins University, research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research as well, and he's a visiting scholar at the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. His research focuses on unemployment, inflation, along with fiscal and monetary policy. He's author of Money, Banking, and Financial Markets. Just issued a provocative white paper, The Fed and Lehman Brothers. Welcome, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Honor to have you on. This is kind of the first investigation, I think, in a detailed way into why Lehman was allowed to fail on that fateful September 15th, 2008. And I want to start almost at the end first, which was, in your estimation, how big a mistake was it, and what was the impact of letting Lehman go down?
Well, with the qualification that that wasn't the main point of my paper, I would say the impact was pretty big. I mean, it's hard to do counterfactual history, but I think if Lehman had not failed, the whole financial crisis would not have been so severe. And if the financial crisis were not so severe, the Great Recession would not have been as bad, and the economy would be better today.
Yeah, and I know that's not the subject of your report, but I wanted to put into perspective exactly what we're talking about here, how important it was. Is it as simple or as real as the fact that somebody had to have the bad luck, somebody had to lose in the musical chairs to show that there was some sort of a moral hazard here?
Well, I think politically somebody was going to lose, that with each bailout, the political pressure against it increased. So in that sense, if we take politics into account, it was probably inevitable that somebody would have to fail, and Lehman was in the wrong place in line at the wrong time. In economic terms or in legal terms, there wasn't a need for anybody to fail, but politically it was probably inevitable.
Okay, one more thing before we dive into exactly why they fail. We had David Stockman on a while back, and he said that they should have let all five major firms, which would have included Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley after Lehman, they should have let them all fail. And as you know, with the lack of liquidity, was going right through them all like a wildfire. What do you think of that?
That sounds pretty out there to me. I think we saw that having one of the big five investment banks fail was quite disastrous, and I can't even really imagine if all five of them had failed. I mean, it probably would have been worse. I mean, one thing I agree with Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke is that if AIG had failed, we might have had something comparable to the 1930s with, who knows, 20% unemployment. I mean, if all of the big investment banks failed, I can hardly imagine.
All right, let's get to your research, which really a great piece of detailed work. Give us the overview. Why did Lehman Brothers fail, and maybe help us understand the difference between liquidity and solvency?
Okay. The reason Lehman Brothers failed, briefly, like all the investment banks, they made some bets on real estate that went bad, and they had a very thin equity cushion, so they didn't have to lose too much money before people started to question their solvency. But then what was fatal was that when people started to lose faith in the firm, they cut off short-term funding. So all the investment banks did a lot of short-term borrowing to support illiquid assets, and it was essentially a modern version of a bank run when suddenly the money they depended on to operate disappeared. So that was what caused them to fail, along with the fact that the Fed decided not to intervene and lend them the cash that they needed to keep operating.
And this is called the primary dealer credit facility, which could have provided immediate funding from the Fed. They said that they lacked the collateral, and therefore they legally could not loan. Where do you come out on that? And also, was their balance sheet way overstated? Were they legitimately in a negative net worth? You go into that in pretty good detail.
Okay. Well, so starting with the second question first, they reported $28 billion of equity. People who looked closely at their books from Barclays and Bank of America, which were both considering buying Lehman, estimated that they overvalued their assets by $15 to $30 billion. So if you subtract 15 to 30 from 28, you get something between negative $2 billion and plus $13 billion. Mm-hmm. So long story short, I think they were borderline solvent. Having said that, you mentioned the distinction between liquidity and solvency. What did them in? I mean, it didn't really matter, certainly in the short term, whether they had plus $2 billion or negative $2 billion in equity. What did them in was running out of cash or the liquidity crisis. Again, like a textbook bank run, a bank might be in perfectly good health in terms of solvency and its business, but if for some reason its deposits are taken away, it can't operate. So the primary dealer credit facility, that was set up after the Bear Stearns crisis, and its exact purpose was that if other investment banks got in trouble and ran out of cash, that the PDCF would lend the cash. And then the central question becomes, under Section 13.3 of the Federal Reserve Act, the borrower needs to have enough collateral. And making a rather long story short, I estimate that Lehman would have needed to borrow about $88 billion, and that they had at least $131 billion of collateral acceptable by the PDCF. So it would have been very feasible and legal and safe for the Fed to lend. And that contradicts what Fed officials have said.
Contradicts what Bernanke and Paulson have represented ever since then.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question now. First off, I've always wondered why Wall Street firms allowed themselves to be susceptible to runs by relying so much on repos and commercial paper, and that's just short-term funding for people, which can dry up literally overnight. Drexel went down that way. Bear went down that way. Why do you think that is?
So that's an interesting nuance. Most of their short-term borrowing was repurchase agreements, not commercial paper, which in less technical terms means that it was collateralized lending.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it was a textbook bank run. The way it's different is in a bank run, if there's no deposit insurance, if you don't get to the bank in a hurry, you lose your money. So there can be a self-fulfilling panic when everybody rushes to the bank. People thought, and this is very clear, people thought that repurchase agreements were a great idea because they were collateralized loans, and actually with haircuts, so the collateral was more than 100% of the loan. So the people lending the money were protected in case of default, and that in turn meant that they would never have any incentive to cut off repo financing even for a firm that was in trouble. And that actually first in the Bear Stearns crisis and then Lehman, that was a big unpleasant surprise. That and still I not fully understood why the repo lenders were so quick to cut off funding when it wasn't really risky for them.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because that to me is part of the whodunit. Another thing that that I glean from your work here is that not to get too technical, but J.P. Morgan act as a clearing agent on the repurchase agreements and tri-party collateral position, and they suddenly sought bigger haircuts or bigger collateral coming out of them, and they did it right around the time that they took over Bear. So it looks like it could be a potentially kind of a conflict of interest there, right, that they helped put the knife in Lehman.
I don't know. There's a less sinister interpretation, which is that just that they were trying to protect themselves.
Okay.
You're right. It's rather technical. In the tri-party repo market, part of the time the repo lender is lending the money, and part of the time during the day J.P. Morgan, the clearing bank, was lending the money. And J.P. Morgan realized that in some scenarios they could be left holding the bag. Although, again, it wasn't really that risky because it was collateralized. But they realized that Lehman might fail to pay them back, and so they demanded collateral. And that was on top of the collateral that Lehman was already pledging to the ultimate repo counterparties. So it was another unexpected drain of cash.
Unexpected, and became a self-fulfilling prophecy, which you would think that J.P. Morgan would not want to help bring them down. Business Talk with Jim Campbell on BizTalk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. We'll talk next about how the Fed did force the failure of Lehman Brothers.
Have you heard? Proactiv Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 800-726-1031, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv Plus risk-free and get two free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-726-1031. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-726-1031. That's 800-726-1031.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too, because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance, it's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back with Johns Hopkins University econ professor Larry Ball. And in his recent paper, he basically makes the point that the Fed has misrepresented why they let Lehman file and go bankrupt and end a 140-year elite bulge bracket firm on the street. Why don't you take us through how they did some of the steps that resulted in almost forcing Lehman to file for bankruptcy? And by the way, can legally the government force anybody to file a private enterprise to file for bankruptcy to begin with?
So that's an interesting question. And I think one thing people don't realize is that the Fed did not just passively let them fail. The Fed actually did things to make sure that they failed. And the first thing they did is on the famous Sunday afternoon, September 14th, called the lawyers and executives, the Lehman Brothers, down to a dramatic meeting at the New York Fed. And this is all recorded in popular books like Andrew Ross Sorkin, Too Big to Fail, and said, you need to declare bankruptcy, and we don't want to hear any argument. Go back to your headquarters and write a bankruptcy petition. Now, there was the detail that the federal government and the Fed do not, in fact, have the legal authority to tell the board of directors of a private corporation whether to file a bankruptcy petition. So what they did, though, was to take actions to ensure that Lehman didn't have enough cash. So Lehman filed for bankruptcy at 1:45 a.m. on Monday the 15th, which was 6:45 a.m. in London, where their London broker-dealer was going to open at 9 and had no cash and was supposed to pay somebody $4 billion at 9 a.m. and didn't have it. And the Fed ensured that that happened. And again, it gets a little bit technical, but the Fed actually, in hopes of easing the crisis somewhat, provided cash to Lehman's broker-dealer in New York, but denied cash to the broker-dealer in London. So the London unit failed, and that was their obligations were guaranteed by the overall Lehman, by the holding company. So then the holding company had to declare bankruptcy.
Not to interrupt you, but I will. It's that not providing the London broker dealer sub of Lehman, and right after that, they did write offer for the broker dealers in London of Morgan Stanley and Goldman. Am I right?
That is right, and that is something which I've seen almost no mention of. And actually, I was well into my research and writing my paper before I noticed that. So again, it's a little technical, but the primary dealer credit facility lent to the New York subsidiaries of investment banks and not to subsidiaries in other places. But no, and Lehman Brothers requested support for their London broker dealer. It was turned down, and then almost exactly 7 days later to the hour, basically on the Sunday night when Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs thought they might not be able to keep operating, the Fed did a 180-degree turn and lent to the London broker dealers of Goldman and Morgan Stanley.
Now, you said that they did lend to the broker-dealer subsidiary in New York, but why wouldn't they lend to Lehman Holdings? And again, that sort of ensured that the overall company would fail.
Well, so again, it's easier to say what's not the explanation. So the explanation is not anything about insufficient collateral or illegality. The only way I can understand it was they had a tough situation in that they did not want the headlines, and Henry Paulson, who was running the decision-making, did not want the headlines to say government bailout. They wanted the headlines to say government stands firm and doesn't lend. So they wanted somebody to have to declare bankruptcy, but at the same time, they wanted to minimize the effect on the economy, and they thought that keeping the New York broker-dealer in business for a while might mean that having the holding company fail wouldn't be all that bad for the economy, which turned out to be a bad gamble.
And talking about that in scale, you mentioned that $88 billion would have allowed Lehman Holdings to survive, and the Fed, the government, ended up lending AIG $182 billion.
Yes. And they actually, it got less attention, but at one point Morgan Stanley
yes,
said we have a liquidity pool of $50 billion of cash. And what people didn't know at the time was that they had borrowed $100 billion from the Fed. So the Fed lent a lot of cash to a lot of people.
By the way, that raises another point. Lehman goes down September 15th. September 21st, that primary dealer credit facility is made available to Morgan, Goldman, and Merrill Lynch and accepted, I believe, the very collateral the Fed would not accept from Lehman. Is that right?
Yeah. So actually, there are two. So the Fed actually, on September 14th, the Fed expanded the collateral. So actually, again, the ironic thing about the 14th and the 15th was that the headlines say no bailout. But actually, on the 14th, the Fed actually did lend $28 billion to Lehman's broker-dealer,
right,
and vastly expanded lending to everybody else by broadening the collateral that the primary dealer credit facility accepted. So, but those, you know, in the media were minor technicalities that were not, again, the headline was all about the bankruptcy filing. The thing on September 21st was different. That was so September 14th was expanding the collateral. September 21st was giving credit to the London broker dealers as well as the New York broker dealers.
The derivative contracts start to fall apart, right, because the counterparties want more collateral. Is that something where the Fed could have forced the counterparties not to seek greater collateral at that time, or something like that, that might have helped them survive a little bit longer?
Let's see. I'm not sure. I hadn't thought of that. I'm not sure the Fed has the authority to do that, or that would even have been necessary.
Okay.
One of the liquidity drains that Lehman faced were these collateral calls. But in my calculations, Lehman had plenty of assets available to borrow all the cash it needed for all of its liquidity drains, including these collateral calls.
Okay. Tell us now, as we get down to the last minute and a half, the Fed was running the show, but who was the real decider? Because this is interesting, too, that this should happen.
Well, the real decider, briefly, was Henry Paulson. And that's interesting because under the law, the Federal Reserve has the sole authority to decide on these things. But Henry Paulson, it seems, simply showed up at the New York Fed and started telling people what to do, and they did what he told them to do.
You know, what's interesting as we finish this off, too, is that these guys are so stuck on this story that Chairman Bernanke says, oh, this became a catastrophe and a calamity. They'd rather admit that they completely screwed up than what they actually really did.
Well, but then the rest of the story is our hands were tied legally. We knew it would be a calamity, but we couldn't break the law.
Business Talk with Jim Campbell. We're taking on Wall Street in Washington from the Radical Center. And next, we'll explore a what-if case, if Lehman could have survived, and then whether they deserved to survive.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
How deep in debt are you? $10,000? $15,000? Maybe even more? And every day that goes by, you know what happens. Your debt gets larger and larger and larger. Well, if you've had it with your mushrooming debt problem and the stress it is causing you, make this free call today to the Debt Solutions Network. One quick no-obligation call is all it takes for one of our partner companies to show you how they can help you get out of debt. So if you have $10,000 or more in combined debt and you want to learn how you can solve it, make this free, no-obligation call now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035.
If you are in serious debt, you have to get out of it and fast. Call my friends at the Debt Solutions Network now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035. Call us 24/7. 800-814-5035.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too, because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance, it's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you.
800-915-9658, 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back with Professor Larry Ball of Johns Hopkins. He's got a white paper out, the Fed and Lehman Brothers. And just to summarize, the decider was Hank Paulson. And why exactly didn't the Fed rescue Lehman? You're saying that the legal justification is really doesn't hold water. Is it just the politics of it? Didn't want to be Mr. Bailout? What else do you attribute?
Well, I think the number one factor was, as Henry Paulson has been widely quoted as saying, he didn't want to be Mr. Bailout. So it was, and that's actually very understandable. There was intense political pressure. And one could even argue that it was wise for the Fed to take that into account. If the Fed gets politicians too angry at them, that could threaten their independence. But in any case, so I think it was politics, but that's not what they say. I mean, another important factor, though, was that they did not fully anticipate all the bad things that were going to happen as a result of the bankruptcy, the panic, the run on money market funds, and so on and so forth. And actually, and that's another place where what Fed officials have said since the bankruptcy is different from what was actually happening and what they were saying before the bankruptcy. I think you mentioned Ben Bernanke and others now insist we knew it would be a calamity, we knew it would be a catastrophe. Again, it's so unfortunate our hands were tied legally. But at the time, by coincidence, on September 16, the next day, there was a meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee, the Fed officials in Washington, and there was a discussion of Lehman and not very much concern that anything calamitous had happened.
And in fact, I do think that they completely misunderstood, were blindsided by the impact of looking like the derivatives market was going to fall apart. Because AIG had all the credit default swaps, and when Lehman's contract started to fall apart, it was going to be a blow through right through AIG. Do you think?
I'm not sure. It gets so complex. A lot of it was just the shock value and the panic, I think. But
all right, let's go through some what-if cases. If they'd done certain things on whether Lehman would have survived and what the difference. In the first instance, right after Lehman failed, they instantly allowed Goldman and Morgan Stanley to become bank holding companies, right?
Yeah.
And that seems like it could have easily applied to Lehman.
Absolutely. And one detail of the story actually is that over the summer, the previous summer in June or July, Lehman actually inquired about becoming a bank holding company, and Fed officials were discouraging and said that's not a good idea. But yes, they could have done that. I mean, I think a number of things could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as is famously known, Lehman was almost rescued by being acquired by Barclays. And then at the last minute, that deal fell through because of some complex objections by British regulators. One possibility is simply that if the Fed had kept Lehman going for a couple of weeks, let's say, by lending cash, that the Barclays deal could have been untangled, and that might have happened.
Don't you think also that Barclays is looking at this thing and they're saying, wait a minute, these guys are going to be bankrupt in a day or two. Why wouldn't we get them out of fire sale and wait? It seemed like self-fulfilling to me.
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, there was really a deal written down. I think Barclays thought that they were going to actually acquire the whole Lehman Holdings and avert the bankruptcy. And the Fed thought that was going to happen. And Lehman thought that was going to happen. I think it was a big surprise to everybody on September 14th that fell through, again, because of these arcane regulatory issues. at that point, Barclays then decided to buy the parts they wanted from the bankruptcy estate. So maybe afterwards, Barclays actually was happy at how it worked out. But yeah. I don't think that was the plan from the beginning.
Now, I think you raise a good point in that if they had stepped back and looked at a longer-term resolution, hadn't pressured the deal, maybe set up a special purpose vehicle off balance sheet to take all that illiquid real estate that was collapsing, that might have been a more sensible way to go about it.
Yes. So Lehman, several days before they went bankrupt, announced a plan to spin off some of their real estate assets into a real estate trust. I guess the popular lingo is splitting the firm into a good bank and a bad bank, the real estate trust. Actually, Ben Bernanke discusses that plan in his memoirs and has actually some mildly positive things to say, saying that kind of plan sometimes works. That wasn't such a bad idea. But then Bernanke says, well, obviously they didn't have time to implement that plan. But, of course, the reason they didn't have time was that the Fed wouldn't provide liquidity support. That's another possible outcome.
The whole thing seems like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, we had Steve Forbes on, and he harks on one big thing, which is the mark-to-market nature of that, and that which actually forced the assets to be, marked down, which results in the insolvency. Do you think that there should have been a hold to maturity or a not forced to mark-to-market?
Well, I mean, certainly the Fed and should have taken that into account. When we talked before about their borderline solvency, maybe a little bit positive, a little bit negative, mm-hmm. We were implicitly talking about mark-to-market values. Given the distress in financial markets, fundamental values, or values based on future cash flows, were almost certainly higher. So on that basis, Lehman was very likely solvent and viable in the long run. So I'm not sure about formally changing accounting rules, but certainly that should have been taken into account. And that's a reason to think that Lehman could have continued.
Now, Goldman was partly saved by an equity injection of $5 billion by Goldman into Goldman Sachs. And is it that they couldn't find someone to just I know that the Korean Development Bank was looked at, but they couldn't seem to get it done. And the second part of this question is, in long-term capital management, the Fed forced Wall Street to put together the bailout fund, if you will. Was that possible in any way here?
Okay, well, remind me of the first question again. I'm sorry.
The first one was, that an equity injection, which, by the way, is what the TARP ended up being.
Yeah. So Lehman had, over the preceding 6 months, tried very hard to get investors. So the Korean Development Bank, various other sovereign wealth funds. They called up Warren Buffett. They called up Carlos Slim, and they never could make a deal. And what people, including Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke, have said, which actually sounds plausible to me, is that Richard Fuld, the CEO, didn't completely face reality and thought his company was worth more than it was, mm-hmm. and that was why he set too high a price. I think, though, by September 14th, the price they were demanding went way down. They essentially were going to sell the whole firm to Barclays for almost nothing. So again, I think it's quite possible that, or even likely, that if Lehman had stayed in business for a matter of weeks or months, that getting equity injections like Goldman did, like Morgan Stanley did from a Japanese firm, that would have again been part of the solution. Now, the second question about long-term capital management. So, again, one nuance of the story is that part of the agreement for Barclays to acquire Lehman involved a consortium of Wall Street firms financing some of Lehman's real estate assets. So the Fed and Henry Paulson were actually successful in getting this Wall Street firm to do something similar to the LDCM deal instead of the Bear Stearns deal where the Fed actually financed the assets. So that was part of the whole package, which again fell apart at the last minute because British regulators wouldn't approve it because of complicated things about financing the firm in between the deal and the final approval by shareholders.
And some of the sad things that are coming out of that by forcing all this, you talked about they were going to sell the investment management division, which was mainly Neuberger Berman, and you use a figure there to kind of get $2 billion for it. And then elsewhere, it says that it was actually probably worth $8 billion, and they're basically giving it away.
Yes. There were classic fire sales that once they went bankrupt, the New York broker-dealer, there was great pressure to sell that very quickly. So a lot of the loss of value from the bankruptcy came from these fire sales of subsidiaries.
All right, we'll finish up the story in our final national segment, and we'll talk about did Lehman deserve to fail?
Starting a business can be tough, but getting the word out about your business through a great website can be even tougher. That's why you need SpotOnWebsite.com. At SpotOnWebsite.com, you can register your company's domain name and even build your website overnight. It's fast, easy, and most of all, it's sure to fit your budget. SpotOnWebsite.com has a wide range of internet products and solutions to make the most of your website, even on a small business budget. Log on today and see for yourself at SpotOnWebsite.com.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I need back-to-school supplies for my son.
Well, Staples has everything you need at low prices every day.
He needs folders, binders, a backpack.
Well, sounds like quite the little organizer.
No, he's quite the little loser.
Come again?
He loses papers, homework, you name it, he loses it.
Ah, that kind of loser.
Oh, yeah.
Got it.
Back-to-school supplies are back for more. Staples has everything you need for back-to-school at low prices every day. Like a 4-pack of 3M Post-its for just $3. Staples, make more happen.
While supplies last, ends 9/17, limit 30 in store, 10 online.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still
still at historic lows. You can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
BizTalkRadio.com.
We're back with Professor Ball on the Fed and Lehman. And, you know, I think of a 150-year-old firm, it was a partnership that the first and the management should be responsible for is like a doctor, do no harm. Clearly, their business model failed, and it was a result of management failure. And I want to talk about some of the components. The first on their leverage, it was 33-1 at the end. They were investing in all these illiquid assets, including they did a Archstone $22 billion deal at the top of the market. At the same time, Goldman was starting to short the market. So, I mean, how do we account for the fact that these guys are highly paid guys and they screwed up?
That's an interesting question. It's not obvious to me that they should be judged that harshly, or at least graded on the curve compared to the other investment banks, because what they did was not that different from what Goldman and Morgan and Merrill Lynch and Bear Stearns did. All of them invested heavily in real estate. All of them had very thin equity cushions, very high leverage. All of them relied on short-term funding. I think where Lehman was a little bit different was, as you mentioned, Goldman Sachs relatively early in the game started moving away from real estate and betting against it. Lehman actually made a strategic decision in 2006, 2007 to go more heavily into real estate on the theory the prices were being pushed down artificially by panic about the mortgage crisis and that they could buy cheaply and then make a lot of money when markets returned to normal. And of course, that didn't work out. I mean, I guess it's a cliche to say in capitalism, if you lose money, you fail, and that's what ought to happen to you. Here, financial institution like this, the damage to the overall economy and the number of people who lost their homes and lost their jobs is so great that I think whether Lehman got its just desserts or not is really kind of secondary to the fact that there is such tremendous damage to the economy.
Good points. And I was, though, bothered. The chairman and CEO was Richard Full, and I still remember him before the testifying in the House or the Senate and basically saying, for the rest of my life, I'll have no idea why we weren't bailed out. But this is a guy who took $345 million out of the firm the prior 5 years. So what he was asking for is heads I win and tails I want to win, too.
Certainly he made mistakes, but in his defense, I mean, he's been so vilified that it makes me want to defend him a little bit.
Okay.
He said, I don't understand why we weren't bailed out. I think what he meant by that was there was no good reason to treat them differently from all the firms that were rescued.
And we should say that's the whole thesis basically of your work.
Yes. So again, the Fed says Lehman was unique in not having enough collateral to get a loan. That just doesn't fit the fact. So I actually have some sympathy for Richard Fald thinking that this was arbitrary and unnecessary.
Okay, and a good way to segue from that is compare it briefly to the other cases. I mean, Bear Stearns did get $30 billion and was allowed to set up that bad bank through Maiden Lane. AIG gets bailed out, and they're not even under the Fed's auspices, et cetera, go out. GE essentially bailed out on commercial paper too, right?
I don't know as much about GE. I know a lot about Bear Stearns and AIG. And actually, again, one way in which I'm afraid the facts don't fit the official story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the official story is AIG had good collateral. Lehman did not have good collateral.
Right.
The facts seem to be much more the opposite, that Lehman could have survived just with this over-collateralized overnight liquidity assistance, which, long story short, is not very risky. With AIG, they set up this two-year line of credit, and the collateral was the equity interests in AIG's insurance subsidiaries. And the Fed has never said, or has actually explicitly refused to say anything about how much these subsidiaries were worth. It's very unclear to me whether the collateral for the AIG loan amounted to anything worth the $85 billion that they initially got on September 16th.
Interesting. And I don't want to get too grassy knoll on conspiracy theories, yeah, but Hank Paulson's your decider, as you say. And there are some people that feel that that bailout was to get money back door to Goldman on the derivatives credit default sweep collateral. And secondly, that maybe Mr. Paulson didn't like Lehman Brothers too much. Is that all too grassy knoll?
I think that's a little too grassy knoll. I think Paulson, succumbed to political pressures in letting Lehman fail, which, and most human beings would have been very affected by those political pressures. I think then what happened with AIG is that he realized that the economy was heading for disaster. And suddenly being Mr. Bailout didn't look all that bad compared to being Mr. Great Depression, worse than the 1930s. So the stories about Goldman versus Lehman, I honestly think that is probably secondary.
And I agree with that, by the way. I think Paulson's pretty much of a straight arrow. Now, obviously, your findings very provocative. You're essentially uncovering, challenging the Fed's official version that they have never walked off of. Have you gotten any sort of feedback formally or informally?
From
the Fed, from Paulson, from Bernanke, any sort of those sources?
I have talked to a few people I know at somewhat lower levels in the Fed who say that they don't agree with me, and we haven't really discussed it in detail, but certainly people I know at the Fed have not liked my conclusion. I have not heard anything from I don't think Ben Bernanke has said anything to my knowledge. I think one reporter called up Henry Paulson, and Henry Paulson said some kind of boilerplate about I stand by everything that I said in my memoirs.
Interesting. Is there a moral of the story that you come up with this, whether it's transparency or truth in government or politics versus analysis? Is there something that in your mind you'd like to sort of express?
Well, probably the number one thing is transparency. Anybody who follows the Federal Reserve knows that Fed officials, Ben Bernanke for that matter, Janet Yellen, talk a lot about the importance of transparency in monetary policy. The Fed is politically independent, but they have a responsibility to be transparent, explain what they're doing and why they're doing it. And they simply did not live up to that standard in this episode.
You've been listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks to Johns Hopkins Professor of Economics Larry Ball, who's done a great piece of work uncovering the demise of Lehman Brothers. The paper is called The Fed and Lehman Brothers. And Larry, one last thing. Where could people take a look at it?
The easiest place might be my website at the economics department at Johns Hopkins.
Thanks again to our national audience for listening. Thanks to Larry Ball. See you next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
BizTalkRadio.com.